Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to MBR, or as we like to call it around here, Nothing But Rants, the show where I find topics that I'm oddly passionate about, and I pontificate upon them. These are not hot takes, but rather takes that I'm hot about.
Let's shut up and grab some tape.
I guess everyone hates me. All, you know, it's another flop.
That's so. How you take it when people don't flood your posts with likes. You're like, everybody hates me.
No, I'm saying I understand how some people get depressed because of social media. Like the thought of like when you post something of, this is going to turn out great, and it flops. Welcome in, everybody.
Yeah, you know, I could see that. I could see, like, I do understand the feeling of like, I put a lot of work into this, and I feel like it was not reciprocated with the amount of love that I thought it would. I understand that aspect of it. Like, it sucks. Like, I really thought about this when I crafted it. But, yeah, welcome in, everybody. That's enough of our random tangent. You know, helping Kirby out over there with the social media platforms. Just need some advice. Go like his posts. Go follow him. Go follow us if you haven't already. Because he's got bangers over there, and not enough people are paying attention to him. But welcome to the MBR Hour. We got a loaded show for you guys. Say it's really just a show of a lot of different topics, a lot of different news items that have been circulating around college football. So we're going to cover all of those things. Kirby is bringing his weekly top five of the week. We'll see what this one is. Last week we had best 80s songs. Today we'll see. We'll wait and see. We'll see if there's any criticism. I don't know. Let's just dive right into the content though, Kirby. Ryan Day thinks there should be an NFL draft for college football.
Yeah, it's more of a suggestion than anything and kind of an idea he floated out. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Do you want me to, like, this is the first segment we're actually talking about, or are you previewing the
rest? I'll go ahead and give a rundown too. Okay. Just wanted to tease that one out there for you guys. Off like the surface of just that headline though, I don't know if that's even possible. I don't even know how that would work, but interested to see how Ryan Day thinks it would work. NCAA being proactive for once, not reactive, proactive, go ahead and getting out in front of something that could have potentially been an issue. We'll see. We'll talk about it. There's already been some discussions of like, well, that doesn't matter. But you know what? Happy that an act was at least attempted from them. Alabama's AD and an SEC football coach joining in on the train of, hey, conference games, RIP, they're done. We don't need them anymore. Jeremiah Love had some comments about NIL and college football. Another Cam Newton comp dropped, Christian.
Oh, another one?
Is this the new Paul Feinbaum says, Greg McElroy says, hey, new Cam Newton comp dropped?
Good. I mean, sure, why not? Let's just keep comparing everyone we can to one of the greatest college football
quarterbacks. Yeah, for as much
of
an anomaly as Cam Newton was and is, very strange that he often gets compared to other players. I guess it's just like we really want somebody to be the next one. I don't know that we'll ever get another one of those, though. And then Kurt Cignetti went to bat for one of his players after his former head coach had some crossed words, some would say, about his former player. So we're going to dive into that as well. But we'll go ahead and start with the Ryan Day one about how he thinks there should be an NFL draft for college football. How would this work? What did he propose?
So, yeah, obviously NIL and the talent acquisition and the way it goes is one of the biggest cruxes that's going on in college football right now, and it's leading all these people to say, hey, how can we fix this? The way that the highest bidder can get all the most talented players seems a bit unfair. What kind of reset can we do? Ryan Day was doing an interview today. I don't know who it was with. I believe it was someone with ESPN, but kind of talking about how what can we do to mitigate this? And he kind of floated out the idea of, hey, maybe we need to do some sort of NFL draft style model. It's a very half-baked idea on his end. It's not like Ryan Day came forward and was like, listen, everyone, I've got the perfect idea for how we're going to fix college football. Here's the draft. But here's a couple of quotes from him. He said, it's not too far-fetched for me to think that there's a way that we could actually have a draft and build it like the NFL. I know that seems a little bit out there, but we're going to need a lot of help to get there. I can tell you that right now. He went on to talk about more. Once we start going down this road of NIL, we have to go one of two ways. We almost have to go back to the way we were before, or we need to go all the way toward the NFL. I think right now we're in sort of a purgatory, and I think until we start to make some hard decisions and create the overall structure, we're going to still be in this phase. Now, the idea and the sentiment of, hey, let's create an NFL-style draft where these players get to choose, or you know, the teams get to choose, and it's an allotment, it's not necessarily, you know, biggest spender gets the most talent. I appreciate that sentiment. I appreciate the idea of this is how we'll mitigate big spenders just taking all the talent and things like that. What I don't really love is the idea that, one, there's not really a set model in place. There's no NCAA minimum right now. You'd have to do hardcore negotiating for that. You'd have to unionize players for that to get the case. And then you're also going to tell players at 17, 18 years old, hey, here's where you're going to spend the rest of your college career. And even at that point, if it's just not a school you don't want to go to, just hit the transfer portal. So the sentiment is great in that there's got to be something that can be done to stop big buyers from just buying all the talent. I don't think an NFL-style draft is going to work.
No, there's too many teams. There's too many players. Like, there's too much involved there for a draft style to work. Now, I did hear – so this was on the Bill Simmons show, and it wasn't Bill Simmons' idea. It was a guest that he had. I can't remember the person's name. But this was an interesting idea. Now, they were actually talking about college basketball, but they were – obviously, this would work for all of college sports. But – and again, I don't think that this is actually a solution. But he proposed that you should have to – like, wherever you play high school football or basketball or wherever, like, say you play high school football in the state of Georgia, you could only go to a college that is either in the state of Georgia or that is touching the border of Georgia. So, like, all these players are set to a region now, and you have to play in that region. And the sentiment behind this was, now you get kids that have, like, some hometown value a little bit to where they're from. Like, maybe there's a little more passion to it.
Yeah.
Obviously, this wouldn't work. And, like, the solution to that for anybody is, we'll just go transfer to a different high school. If you want to go play for someone else, you just transfer to a different high school, and it alleviates any of that. But just an interesting, like, theory, I suppose, that was proposed for that. Again, like, I don't think there's a solution to this up until the point of we get some regulation set.
The thing I learn more and more as the older I get and watch the way this sport revolves is basically everything from the year of 2020 was thought through as, you know what, this is a good idea. It seems like the right thing to do. Let's do it without any plan of execution.
Yeah.
Paying players was long overdue. Having some form of monetary compensation for what these people were doing on the field and the revenue that they were bringing into the school, they absolutely should have been getting some form of money. The NCAA, the schools at hand, everyone else failed to realize the fact that if we just open the floodgates and say, yeah, these guys can get paid, you're essentially creating this type of sport that you have right now where everyone's looking around going, this is a mess. Rosters are $40 million and it's not slowing down. We talked about that earlier this week. So I agree with the idea that something's got to change, and I love all of these, oh, well, you know, we can do this and make it only to the high school regionality. It's a bunch of great ideas that when you get into the nitty-gritty of how to execute it, they're all terrible and they make things worse. So
for sure,
that's what got us here. So at some point, there has to be a real thought-out execution. And it, to the fairness of the NCAA, was simpler back then.
Right.
Oh, if you're paying players, you get suspended. You get punished. It was simple. Nowadays, there's too many more nuances for it. So.
I mean, there's a whole lot you could get into there about what could maybe level the playing field even more. I know that NIL has created parity in a sense. That's what everybody likes to talk about with all sports. This isn't even just a college football discussion. You know, people would say that college basketball games are better than ever. It has leveled the playing field, but there's also aspects to it that haven't leveled the playing field, because now it is whoever has the biggest budget can also get the biggest players. And that's certainly an advantage that you can have. If you can get donors or you can get alumni to pour a bunch of money into your program, that's an advantage to you. The ability to get those people to buy into what you're selling, that's an advantage. But it's also kind of cutting out a large portion of the programs.
Yeah, and I mean, even the NIL has brought parity thing. I don't know if I fully agree with that. Like, Indiana is certainly a great case for that, but you could almost argue that what Indiana did wasn't because they were just out here getting racks and things like that.
I will say this, that at least NIL has certainly made sense. Like, had you expanded the playoff field to 12 teams pre-NIL, it wouldn't have made any sense. I feel like it would have made no sense at all, because we talk about it all the time, especially when we get into the offseason, about how, like, 5 years ago when you went into an offseason, you usually had three teams that you felt like had a legitimate chance of winning a national title, and typically one of those three teams ended up being the team that won it. And even going into the playoff field, you certainly didn't think that there was more than four teams that could win a national title, to where now it's at least believable that one of those 12 teams is good enough to win a national title. It's not just set around three teams that are at the top, and then there's a big step down from the rest. But so, like, it at least makes sense in that. But again, there's a lot of different issues with this. But The good news is, now that we've just kind of crapped on the NCAA a little bit and how things have gotten really out of hand ever since I started paying players, they did do something that is somewhat promising, and I will give them a little golf clap for being proactive in this and not being reactive, and that's about the ghost transfers.
Yes.
And we actually discussed this before it actually had a name, where we were like, all right, the spring transfer portal has been eliminated for college football, but what's stopping a player from just unenrolling at a school and enrolling somewhere else, not entering the transfer portal, but since they are student athletes by name, what's stopping them from just unenrolling at a university and then just saying, all right, I'm going to enroll there and I'll be a walk-on. I won't be on scholarship. I'll just go play football there. So those are called ghost transfers. Those are what are being called. That's what they're being called. And the NCAA has proposed some rules as to help keep teams away from doing these things. And this is an article from Brandon Marcello over at CBS Sports. So here's are the rules that they're presenting. The legislation approved Wednesday imposes severe penalties on programs that accept players who transfer without entering the portal, a half-season suspension for the head coach from all coaching, recruiting, and administrative duties, and a fine equal to 20% of the school's football budget. Sounds great. It's great that we're putting rules into place. It's great that we're telling teams like, hey, you better not do this because there are rules against this, and if you do so, they will be punished. But as we all know, in the reality of college football and what some quotes in this article allude to, it really doesn't matter because as soon as one lawsuit is won, everything goes to crap. It doesn't matter what rules you've said. And here are some quotes that some coaches gave on this. This is from an AAC head coach. It's good. It's going to add legal chaos, but it will keep rosters mostly intact until one player wins a lawsuit. So there's one quote on that one. There's another quote down here. If they actually do it to somebody who violates it, absolutely it'll work. One as ACC coaches. So again, if it actually works, this is great. But nobody mm-hmm. knows if this is actually going to work. There's no way in hell any of this shit holds up. An SEC head coach told CBS Sports, if a kid gets kicked off a team, he can't join another team. That's a valid point that he's making too.
No, like, it's a very valid point.
I mean, you're in the middle of spring football, a player gets kicked off the football team, what's stopping him from going to another school before college football starts? Now, I don't know if that actually applies to the ghost transfer rule. I don't know. I don't know the actual inner workings of that and what the actual language says, what is a ghost transfer and what isn't. But
yeah, well, I mean, you just pointed out a great loophole for that of, all right, I want to transfer. I can't be a ghost transfer because I'm going to, you know, that's going to bring a penalty upon my new team and me. I'm just going to get kicked off of my team right now and get a hardship transfer. It's not hard to get kicked off a football team. Some some teams do it for, you know, showing up late to meetings enough or other things like that. Like,
I mean, not to do this thing, but we saw how easy it was for someone to get kicked off an NBA team this week.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's certainly
it's a different, but I'm just saying, like, you know, like,
yeah, no, you're right.
It's a slippery slope for some things.
Again, and what's to say that, oh, you know, I was kicked off my other team, I should be able to join this team, or I was, you know, wrongfully dismissed for reasons. Like, we've seen players in situations where there's a pending legal case, they get dismissed from the team, and then things come back later, and, oh, he was actually innocent. Like, stuff like that happens, so... Mm-hmm. Again, this goes back, and I feel like this is the theme of the episode of, I love the sentiment of this. I love right. the idea of this. I don't think the execution is going to be as cut and dry.
Right. So again, that's why I wanted to start by saying, this is good that the NCAA is at least trying. They're being proactive in this. Like, they didn't wait for spring football to wrap up and then players start being ghost transfers and be like, oh, we need to do something about this. Holy crap, how did we not know this was about to happen? Like we have seen in other instances with this sport. And there's another quote in here, too, that comes from a Big Ten general manager. Nothing even came of Xavier Lucas leaving for Miami last year other than the fact he played for a national title. There are no teeth right now until somebody really gets hammered for something. No one is scared. And if I'm a blue blood program, what is there to be scared of? The NCAA is going to go for the low-hanging fruit and not the big boys.
No, I mean, it's 1,000% correct. Like, we're seeing rampant – like, and again – the NCAA has no power, unfortunately. We've seen that. The NCAA is making threats, and the NCAA is doing things that are proactive, and we hope, we pray to God that can work so they can enforce some consistency within this league. But so far, nothing has stuck. From basically the last 3 or 4 years, any rule the NCAA has brought down has been met with in court, and it's basically up to the judges. The judges hold all the power here. Mm-hmm. It's not the NCAA. They can make the rules. They can talk about eligibility. That's gotten sued into oblivion. Like, there is no – I have very little hope things will get better as long as the NCAA is the governing body of college football.
Yeah.
Which sucks, That, I mean, the NCAA is what made college football. It's the body that has been the vessel for this sport for its entire existence, essentially. But we're at a point now where the NCAA is, one, a very outdated system, and two, has made a handful of mistakes along the way that has diminished its power to the point where if we want this sport to survive, we're probably going to have to see some separation from it.
Yeah. And so really, ultimately, I think what this is going to take, and we've talked about this before, for teams to really start listening to rules and obeying these rules that are being put in place, I think the conferences are going to have to be the ones that govern those rules. We can't put all of the weight on the NCAA right now, because we know what the situation is. We know how little power they have, like, despite their efforts to try and do the right things in these situations, or what they think is the right things to do. It ultimately doesn't matter, because they're getting their butt whooped in court every time they look around. So I think it is kind of being put on the conferences to really, like, if you want to govern this, if you don't want this to be a thing, it's on the conferences. But then you get into the situation of, like, okay, we're telling – the SEC said they can't take ghost transfers, but the Big Ten didn't say anything about it. They're not doing anything about it. The Big 12 didn't do anything about it. So it would have to take a unification between all the conferences too.
Well, not only that, yeah. And plus, oh, if I'm a conference, enforcing rules is basically limiting my ability to win games and be a certain team. I'm going to look the other way on a lot of things for the sake of my conferences and the teams within it, because the more games I win, the better I look as a conference, the more revenue I'm brought in. So, yeah, it'd be great to say, all right, SEC, you're going to govern all these tamperings, and Big Ten, you're going to do that. And sure, you'll get some cross-pollination between the two, but the NCAA is not going to enforce anything if, say, just for hypothetical sake, say if Alabama goes out and steals Bryce Underwood. You think the NCAA is going to come down and say, hey, or the SEC is going to come down and say, hey, this is against the rules here. We're going to sanction Alabama and punish them. Sorry, Michigan, this happened. No. Alabama's going to be like, well, there's legality things of it, so... You have to have one overarching body that's going to be able to enforce all the rules and have enough power to do so, which it's very clear the NCAA does not have that right now.
Yeah, I mean, even in the instances where, like, going back to last college basketball season, where Alabama has a former professional athlete playing for them. Now, ultimately, that player was told that he could not play for Alabama anymore and that it was against the rules. And that was a win, ultimately, but what was the punishment for Alabama, ultimately? Nothing. They got 5 games out of him, and they were able to use him. And then when they were told him it was against the rules, they just kept going. Like, there was no actual punishment for that happening to them. So you can basically take as many risks as you want and not be punished for them. So that's the other thing of, there's nothing stopping teams from even taking the risk, because ultimately there's no punishment for them committing the act anyways.
Exactly. All right, let's get some more hopeful stories we've got. I think the last two have been kind of downers.
You're right. I know. Anything that involves, like, the current climate of college football, I know we kind of get bogged down in that, and it's kind of doom and gloom. So what's a positive segment, you think?
Sig went to bat today for a
quarterback.
Yes,
a coach standing up for his player. Yeah,
that's
a good segment.
Yeah, we always love to see this, and especially after, you know, our last segment was talking about how Zignetti's trashing a player for gold cleats. And
yeah.
So... Did you see the commenter that said that was a lazy take by us?
Really?
That was interesting. I was like, dang, dude, I'm sorry.
Like, they thought we were the ones giving the take about
it? Well,
they
thought, like, the content in general was lazy because it's a nothing story. But, I mean, I guess he's got a point, but...
Okay.
This is less of a nothing story, don't worry.
Okay. My apologies to that person. I promise we don't bring things that we think are nothing stories.
Don't worry about it. Hey, look, we're good.
I'm just speaking for the people, the listeners, the people that we care about. All right, yeah, Kurt Cinetti went to bat for his quarterback, Josh Hoover. Now, if you remember, very recently, Sonny Dykes was in the middle of an interview and talked about how much he turned the ball over. Now, that's something he's got to fix because he did a lot of it over at TCU. And people took that a certain way because it felt like most people felt like it was just Sonny Dykes taking a shot at a player that left his program and was like, I'm going somewhere better. I don't need you guys anymore. I'm going to Indiana now. So people took it more as a Sonny Dykes taking a shot at a player that told him adios, as opposed to him actually giving analysis on a player. And Cinetti decided to go to bat for Hoover. And I believe this was after a spring practice.
Yeah, he was at a media availability. I don't remember which one.
So this is a quote from Sig. We've got to clean up some of the turnovers, obviously, which Coach Dykes made light of. But when Josh got here, he met his two new best friends. Great defense and a really good run game. And he was never the same after that.
So we're getting a little back and forth between the coaches now of, well, the reason he did that is because your program wasn't shit, Sonny.
And to both of these coaches' credits, neither one of them are wrong in what they're saying. I've talked about, and we have talked about all the time with Josh Hoover, about, hey, he's had some turnover issues in the past, but that might get alleviated a little bit at Indiana because he didn't have the best weapons, and he didn't have a run game, and he didn't have the best offensive line. So you're kind of forcing the issue a little bit when you compile all of those issues. Sometimes that results into, you know, a quarterback pushing the envelope a little bit and throwing into tight windows and maybe making a throw that he shouldn't, and it results in a turnover. And Cignetti's not wrong in saying that, and Sonny Dykes is not wrong in saying that Josh Hoover had a turnover problem. Ultimately, though, I don't think there's an issue with what either coach said.
No, I think Sonny Dykes got dragged through the mud a little bit because, like, oh, you don't say this about a former player of yours. That's a kid. And at what point are we going to allow these coaches to kind of not send shots, but bring light to the situation of some of the flaws they felt like they had players have? Anytime a coach takes a job somewhere else and we do the thing of like, oh, well, they can enter the transfer portal of their own, and anytime a former player speaks, like, we've seen handfuls and handfuls of Ole Miss players make jokes at the expense of Lane Kiffin because Lane Kiffin left them in the dust, rightfully so. Everyone understands it. Everyone kind of enjoys that when jokes are made at the expense of Lane Kiffin. At what point do we afford the coaches the same things when these players, who, by the way, are grown men, the majority of these players are 18, 19, sometimes 23, 24 years old when they're doing these decisions. They know what they're doing. They're making business decisions. They're leaving someone who invested time, money, and resources into them and saying, hey, I'm going to go elsewhere for better opportunities. I understand why Sonny Dykes in this feels a little burned. I understand why Sonny Dykes may be apropos to say, well, yeah, he threw a lot of interceptions for us. Like, he's not a perfect quarterback. I get it. Does it make Sonny Dykes look great? No. Is it the petty way to go about things? Sure, but I don't think we need to drag Sonny Dykes through the mud for it.
No, I don't think so either. And I would imagine that comment that he made about Josh probably isn't something that he didn't also say to Josh during his time at TCU. Like, I'm sure there were situations where they're in Sunday meetings or they're at practice where it's like, buddy, we got to cut the turnovers. We got to limit the turnovers here. We're throwing too many of them. We're forcing too many issues. We've got to stop throwing interceptions. I'm sure that was a conversation that they had. So I think there is a difference between saying, yeah, he had a lot of turnovers here, and also saying, like, well, thank goodness he's not here anymore because he was horrible.
Yeah, no, this isn't a Jaden Daniels situation where they're tearing out his locker and they're like, he sucked anyways. Like, this is very much just a coach saying, hey, you know, this kid's got flaws. He and then they kind of made a joke out of, like, he threw however many interceptions this season for us. So I get it.
Yeah. And I understand, too, that, like, it's the timing and when you say things. It's the context around everything of when you say something. Because, I mean, when you make that comment about a quarterback that used to play for you and that you were invested in, I mean, he spent multiple seasons with TCU and he was their starting quarterback for multiple seasons. It feels really weird to say, to air it out a little bit after he's no longer on your roster, because then everybody's assuming that there's an underlying layer to this, that you're not just talking about the fact that he threw turnovers. You're now trying to take a shot at a player intentionally because he's no longer playing for you, because if he was still playing for you, you're not sitting here making this comment. But maybe he is. You know, maybe Sonny Dykes is sitting there in the offseason talking about Josh Hoover going into another season of being the starting quarterback there, and he's like, yeah, he threw too many interceptions last year, and that's something that we're working on. You know, maybe he does say that, but because of the circumstances and because of the context around everything, that's not how people take it.
On the flip side of this, I think Sig's response is perfect.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of no, it's not Josh, and just putting it on the other team of, well, the reason he was throwing interceptions was maybe because the defense wasn't good and blocking wasn't there. Like, putting it immediately back in. Now, it's going to start a beef between TCU and Indiana, so that'll be fun to watch.
Which doesn't matter at all. They're not even in the same conference.
No,
so.
I mean, they might meet in the playoffs this year.
Potentially. Maybe TCU ends up being the Big 12 representative in the college football playoff. Who knows? But, yeah, I think Cursinetti did all three things here. He, one, let Sonny Dykes know that he saw his comment about his quarterback by saying, which Coach Dykes made light of already. He went to bat for his quarterback, and he also complimented the rest of his team. So, I mean, he did all three things there. I think you're right that it's the right decision to obviously defend your quarterback. You can't let something like that fly and just not respond to it, in my opinion. So good on Kirk Cignetti for doing that. Good on him for defending his quarterback. But again, I don't think either coach is in the wrong. I don't think Josh Hoover is in the wrong, certainly, for seeking a better opportunity that he, like, at least that he viewed as a better opportunity for himself in this situation. I think it's just, hey, we're good now. You know, everybody said their piece, and now it's time to go play football.
Exactly.
Do you want to do your top five now, or do you want to save it? Let's save it.
What do you want me to save it for?
Maybe the end of the show? Do we want to cap the show off with that?
We'll cap the show off with
Let's
that.
Let's cap the show off with that. Let's talk about this.
Hey, you're in the boss's chair. You run everything now.
Oh, really giving me all the power here.
Yeah, man. I'm just over here pressing buttons. Which, by the way, do you ever think about how, like, yes, Brooks is the authoritative figure, but we kind of control the power as far as broadcasts go.
We do have the, like, we don't have maybe as much power as he does, but we do have two of the most powerful things in the studio.
I mean, we technically are holding the nuclear football.
Now,
I can change the camera at any moment with a click of a mouse. You have end the stream. Like,
yeah,
he's over there on his own.
I think I have the most powerful thing at my availability during the show of I'll just cut this thing off whenever I want. And
yeah,
there's really nothing you can do to stop me from doing that. Not that I ever would, but.
Well, maybe.
Just want to feel the power a little bit.
Maybe. Maybe if Brooks is giving a take, we really disagree with you say.
That's it, everybody.
Stream's
That's enough.
Over now.
That's enough of that. I do want to talk about this. I think this is probably the most pressing piece of news that we have had come out over the past couple of days. And that is the discussion of, this is about the SEC title game, but let's face it, this is about conference championship games.
In general.
If the SEC decides that they want to do this, you would imagine that majority of conferences probably follow suit. And this is the fact that we now have two prominent people have discussed how they think that the SEC title game should be no more. We shouldn't play it anymore. Now, this was a massive talking point this past season in the middle of conference championship weekends because the playoff field has been expanded. It's only going to get expanded even more, and that matters because there's going to be even more games that are played in a season if you make the college football playoffs. But really the big proponent that everybody wants to talk about with the conference championships is that it seems unfair that the better teams are having to play an extra game while everybody else is sitting at home getting an extra week of rest. And when you look back at the SEC championship game last year, I mean, Georgia and Alabama were banged up. I mean, they were two of the most beat up teams at that point in the year in all of college football. I mean,
yep.
On both sides. That's not even just making an excuse for Alabama because they lost. Georgia had a bunch of players injured. Alabama had a bunch of players injured. And Kirby Smart talked about it after the game, too. But Alabama's AD, Greg Byrne, is that how you'd say that?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
All right, Greg Byrne.
Pronunciations on this show is never our strong suit. So.
Gave his ultimate take on this, and he said, I think the ship has sailed, Byrne told USA Today. It's run its course. It's a great event. I don't like the idea of it going away, but I think it's reality with an expanded playoff. And Kirby Smart gave the same sentiment to this.
Mm-hmm.
We know how passionate Kirby Smart is about the SEC championship game. He's gone as far as to say that it's better than the Super Bowl. That's how he views it. And he basically said the same thing of, I don't want to see the game go, but if we get past 12 teams, I think that we've ultimately reached the point where we have to. We just have to cut our ties with it and say we can't do this anymore.
Now, obviously, there is a very mature and very reasonable take that is to be given about this situation, but can we indulge just for a few minutes as to, and Kirby Smart obviously diminishes this, but how funny it is. The optics of the Alabama AD, a team that went damn near 20 years without ever losing an SEC championship game. They go to Atlanta, they win. The first time that team loses in 17, 18 years, and by the way, loses big. It was a 21-point loss.
Oh, it was a beatdown.
They got beat down. The AD comes out and goes, that game, it's run its course. I think we're done playing it. It's funny optics. Obviously, that's not why the AD is saying that. Obviously, that's not why Greg Byrne's coming out and saying, all right, we're done playing the SEC, and we'll get into that later. But it is hilarious optics.
I do want to – I don't think that we've actually even proposed this question or even thought about it from this side. But, it's easier to see why maybe a Georgia or an Alabama or, you know, one of the prominent powers in the SEC – is probably okay with seeing the SEC championship game ultimately vanish down the road. Because look, Kirby Smart is in 10 years of coaching. Kirby Smart has played for 8 SEC titles. Is that what you said today?
Correct.
8 SEC titles. He's been in that game a ton. He's won 4 of them. Alabama's been in a ton of SEC championship games. What would a Missouri feel about this? A team that hasn't won one of these, or an Ole Miss who hasn't, like, how do those programs feel about it? Of like, it's one thing to just say the game is no longer being played, but now you're also telling these other teams of you no longer have a shot at winning this game. Now you could be you'll be crowned the regular season SEC champions like they do in basketball and baseball. Mm-hmm. Now they still have tournaments, but you won't get to ever play in that game.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like from a standpoint of it has been a traditional Alabama, LSU, Georgia. Sometimes you throw a Florida in there. Auburn will get there every now and then. But those have been the five teams that are typically in the SEC yeah. championship game. The rest of them do not typically make it. I know Missouri made it twice in 13 and 14, but it's been a collect four to five teams that are always playing at the game. You're right. Like the meaning for these teams has been diminished because it has almost somewhat become a formality. I will say this, though. There's no denying that the meaning of this game has been greatly reduced.
For sure.
If you talk back and you go back and ask, you know, hey, Alabama fans, how bad did that 2008 loss hurt to the Florida Gators? They will tell you. If you talk Georgia fans, hey, how great was it watching DJ Shockley and them win it all in 2005, the SEC championship? That's all great. Georgia's won the SEC championship the last 2 years in a row. Back-to-back, never done before in that school's history. And if you ask every Georgia fan how this season ended for them the last 2 years, they would say it's been a disappointment.
Oh, for sure.
The meaning of that game has been diminished. Now, obviously, there's factors into that. Maybe it is oversaturation. Maybe Georgia's just played in it too damn much that they don't even care about it anymore. Maybe Alabama's the same way. Maybe the fact that we now have a 12-team playoff where so much meaning has been placed into how deep you make a run in that tournament that everything else is caught and fallen by the wayside. Bowl season's fallen by the wayside. I think conference championships are next. That's probably the next step here. So, yeah, you are right. Like, maybe it is an oversaturation of, we're kind of tired of this. But you don't really hear Ohio State talking about, well, the Big Ten championships run its course and things like that. So, I think at the end of the day, this is mostly because of the expansion of the playoff and the idea that, oh, we have to play another game. And mm-hmm. and realistically, let's look at the history of conference championships the last 3 years. 2023, we had two teams that were undefeated in the regular season, played in a conference title game, and missed the playoff because of that conference title game. Florida State because of how they looked without Jordan Travis, and Georgia because they lost to a top 10 Alabama team. Like, that was kind of the nail in the coffin for conference championships might not be the way to go here. And ever since then, Georgia lost its quarterback in 2024. There's been multiple reasons as to why this championship right. and these games are detrimental more than anything.
Well, and like the SEC conference championships, or really conference championships at least in the ACC, in the Big Ten, and in the SEC, like to get into the 14 playoff, that was a path. Like that was just a step in getting there. You had to win your conference. That was just the assumption going into the year. When there was four teams in a playoff, it was, if we're going to earn one of those four spots, it also means that we probably won our conference, unless yep. it's a year like 2017 where Georgia and Alabama get in and Alabama didn't have to play in the SEC title game that year.
Yeah.
Or 2021. Yeah. But for the most part, if you were going to make the 14 playoff, it also meant you had to win your conference. Mm-hmm. So that game had a lot of value then. And even going back to 2023, when Georgia was undefeated, Georgia fans, whether they wanted to accept it or not, deep down they knew, even though we're undefeated, even though we're 12-0, we still have to go and beat Alabama to get our ticket punched for the college football playoff. And you didn't, and you missed the playoff. Whereas now, you don't even have to make the game to get your ticket punched. In fact, the teams that don't make the game, it feels like their ticket is already punched, and you're kind of still sitting there on the chopping block, like, all right, is this going to be it or not? And you're in a situation like Alabama was last year, where if they don't make it to the SEC title game, they're in. They're one of the 12 best teams.
Right.
But then they go and lose 28-7, and all of a sudden there's a conversation of, should they be in? Mm-hmm. Like, their most recent game, they just got boxed by Georgia, who we believe is one of the best teams in the country. And are they worthy of one of the 12 spots now? Now, they were still in the playoff, but that discussion sparks up, and it really pushes the conversation of, does this game matter? Is it worth playing anymore? On top of dealing with injuries, like, should this game be played? And so I agree that once we get past 12 teams, I think it's, without a doubt, you got to step away from it. It's got to be done.
I mean, there's a case even for it now. Like, Kirby Smart, as the confetti was raining down sitting next to Tim Tebow this year after winning an SEC championship, goes, I don't know if this might be one of the last ones we win. Not from an implication of we're not coming back here, of this game might not exist anymore. So it's definitely been weighing on the minds of a lot of people. And I think that the realistic path for conference championships is whenever that day comes where, you know, the powers that be decide we need 16 teams, or God forbid we need 24 teams, or we need more expansion, conference championships will disappear, which sucks, and I hate it because that is a really fun game to watch. They've always been so impactful, but at the same point, if you're going to inflate the postseason tournament that much, the exhibition game that at the end of the day hasn't proven to mean that much to fans, there's no reason to play in it.
Yeah. I know that people have talked about where you make it more than one game, like you have your top two teams in the conference play for the SEC title, and then you have your next two teams play for third place. Like, I know that people have talked about that with conferences, but I just don't know if there's enough interest in that. I don't know if teams want to do that. I think the best thing to do is with the direction that we're heading, where it seems like we're going to 16 teams, or we might even eventually end up to 24 teams. It's just – the value is not there anymore. And it sucks to say that because I came here after the SEC championship game last year and gave a rant about how I don't want to hear anybody say how that game doesn't matter anymore, because every single time I go to a post-game press conference, I sit there and listen to a Trevor Achan or I sit there and listen to a player like Raylan Wilson sit there and talk about how that's the most meaningful game of their life, how that's why they came here, how that game means so much to them, how they love playing in the SEC championship game, and that's what they work all season for other than a national title. But ultimately, it is where we're at. Like, the value of that just isn't there anymore. Like, it doesn't mean as much. And it sucks to say, but I think it's just the truth.
The ideal way to save conference championships and get your expanded playoff would be you go to divisions, the top two teams from each division within a conference play in a conference tournament that feeds directly into the playoff. And you do it similar to how the NFL does, to where, hey, the teams with the two best conference records, where it would be this year, it would be Georgia, A&M, Alabama, and who was fourth in the conference, whoever that was. Mm-hmm. They plan their four-team tournament that feeds directly into the college football playoff. That's how you'd save it. And then the argument goes into, well, not all conferences are the same. Not all divisions are the same. There's weaker. Like, it's always going to be a flaw, but you would get rid of the rigidity. You would add rigidity to that. So that's a more ideal way to save conference championships, in my opinion, of, okay, winning the conference still means something and it still has a direct effect on the college football playoff, to the point where you don't have to look around and go, well, the third best team in the conference gets a bye week right now while me and this other team are bashing heads trying to decide a tournament that will have virtually no effect on our placement or whether or not we'll win a national championship.
I mean, put it this way. Ask Oklahoma last year if they would have liked to play in the SEC title game. I would say probably not.
No.
You want them to have the potential of losing a third game? That could have been the detriment to their season. I think Miami ultimately was happy they didn't play for an SEC title game because they were already sitting at two losses, and because they didn't play that week, that probably played a reason in them getting in. Had you let them go in the ACC title game and they, God forbid, they lose that game, they're not playing for a national title last season. So, like, even the teams that aren't playing in the conference title game, they're probably sitting there being like, I don't want to be in that game.
No, it does not make sense anymore to the format that we have, which sucks because I love that game. But you want to save it, go to divisions, force Notre Dame, hey, you're going to have to play within one of these conferences, and if you have a top two record, you'll be in, but Notre Dame doesn't want to play that ball. So
ultimately, I think the best solution to this, to where you don't just completely dissipate conference championship weekend, is you create some type of play-in game, but I don't know how you calculate that. It would be to the tune of, you have two teams that you feel like need to play an extra game to earn their way into the playoff, but how you determine which two teams need that game the most, I don't know how that works. So I don't know. But I think the good news of this, potentially, is if you did do away with conference championship weekend, it might expedite the schedule a little bit.
I mean, that could at least do that. I mean, that's definitely a given. I think they're going to find a way to do that anyways. Like, people talking about how schedule ends in January, late January. What are we doing? Like,
yeah, we're almost in February.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
I mean, you've got guys that are turning their attentions to draft processes and things like that. Like, we talked about it at the draft, or the combine. More and more players are sitting out because, hey, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I was still playing football. I haven't given my body time to rest, and I damn sure haven't been able to train for this combine, so I'm pushing everything back to pro day. Like, you're seeing more and more of that because the schedule's so long.
Yeah, I mean, when you prolong one thing, you're prolonging everything else. Mm-hmm. So, and the NFL is definitely not going to bend the knee to college football and be like, you know what, guys? You're right. Your season is taking too long, so we're going to move the NFL combine back a few weeks. We're going to move the NFL draft back a few weeks. We'll listen to you, and we'll bend the knee to you. They're definitely not going to do that. So maybe it is wishful thinking to think that college, like, eliminating conference championship weekend would solve some of the scheduling issue, but I don't know, because I thought that it was already an issue, and then they're like, you know what? Add 2 more weeks. So I don't know. I don't know if that is a solution or not, but definitely something to at least consider. Now, you mentioned the NFL draft, and one of the most prominent names in the NFL draft this year is Notre Dame running back Jeremiah Love. Some have gone as far as to say as he's the best player in the NFL draft this year, whether you want to agree with that or not. We know our takes. We gave our stance on that a couple weeks ago. But he had some comments about NIL, and you said that he's also a little out of touch here.
So Jeremiah Love, and I don't have the direct quote for it. I wish I did. But was basically asked about NIL, what he thinks about it. And he said he would like to see these new guys, the young guys, earn their NIL instead of being paid millions and millions of dollars just to be on the team, just to sign. And that's a fair sentiment. I think that it is frustrating when, especially as a player, I would say that if you're a second, third-year guy and then the freshman that's a rated 5-star making 3 times as much as you just because of the price and because the bubble of talent evaluation has gone up and increased so much since then, yeah, it is certainly frustrating. And you would certainly say, hey, you need to earn your stripes. I think the problem with this is that it is still somewhat a little bit out of touch in that the price to just get in the door is that. And that's unfortunate because that is what the price of doing business is for college recruiting. But the way I look at it is the number one overall pick in the NFL, the guy who has not played a single down, half the time statistics say there's a 50% chance he'll be a bust. He won't ever be reach the evaluation that he's given. Gets a $30 million signing bonus the second his name is called on draft night.
Like, yep.
Right from there. The format's kind of the same in the NFL. It's not a, hey, here's the baseline. Now, rookie deals are obviously not your maximums that you would get, and there's veteran minimums and things like that. But at the same point, like, it is always kind of you get rewarded for getting your foot in the door.
I think that the conversation, though, is, like, when you go into the NFL draft, you know exactly what you're – contract, or you know, you have a range of knowing what your contract is going to look like before you even select the player and before that player hears his name called. Like, if you're drafted number one overall, you know you're going to get a $30 million signing bonus and you're going to have a 4-year contract with a 1-year option at the end of it. Like, the contracts are structured the same, and everybody knows, like, as you get further and further down the draft, those numbers are going to look differently. The difference with how college football works is there is no structure to it. It's, hey, the number one player in the country by the rankings could be getting paid $2 million to go somewhere, but the 15th best player in the country, according to the rankings, he might be getting $3 million to go somewhere else. And so I understand what Jeremiah Love is saying, and I think a lot of college football fans would agree with what he's ultimately saying of, it seems a bit skewed that these players aren't exactly earning what they're worth. They're just kind of being paid upright, like what you believe their potential is. And ultimately, the older guys on the roster, the guys that have proven themselves on the roster, the guys that have been playing college football for the last 3 years, they're end up getting, some of them are getting paid less than the incoming freshman that hasn't done anything yet. Like, I do understand the flaw in that system, but I mean, that also happens in the NFL too. I mean, you could be a 10-year vet in the NFL and you might have a $3 million contract. Meanwhile, there's a rookie that's coming in that's about to get $30 million just wired to their account. So I understand both sides. I understand that it's also out of touch, but I do get, like, the absurdity of it is obviously there. That's what I'm getting out of. Like, the structure is needed, and it's what we said the entire time. Anything else on that?
No, I mean, I think it's one of those things, again, the theme of this show is I like the sentiment of it, but the overall, when you get into the details, not necessarily as great as you think.
Right. Well, new Cam Newton comp dropped.
Oh, we got another one.
It's not really another one. They're kind of tied together, but it comes from a new person.
Oh.
And it comes from a person that everybody knows. Now, last week we were on the show talking about how Whittingham compared Bryce Underwood to Cam Newton. And how we said, whoa, maybe pump the brakes there. We don't have to compare everybody to Cam Newton, guys. Like, every big athlete that has a big arm doesn't need to be compared to Cam Newton. Well, then David Pollack said, hey, whoa, don't just look at Whittingham. I said this too. In fact, last season I said that Bryce Underwood reminded me of Cam Newton, and this is what Pollack said. Last year, I compared him to Cam Newton as well. It's hard to compare him to other people that aren't superhuman freakazoids because the dude is big, strong, athletic. He's chiseled. His body type, like, there's not a lot of comparisons there. And this is the issue with the Cam Newton comp and why I think it is so frequent is you see someone that is huge playing quarterback. You see how fast they are. You see how big of an arm they are. And everybody's like, Cam Newton. That's the next Cam Newton. But it's also to a fault because Cam Newton is such an anomaly. And when we were watching Cam Newton play college football, even when you were watching him play in the NFL, I think everybody kind of understood that this was an anomaly. You don't really get Cam Newtons all the time. In fact, you probably will never get another Cam Newton. But the issue with that is everybody wants to be the next one, or everybody wants to claim this guy is going to be the next one, and it's to a fault of these players at times.
Now, I love David Pollack, and I'm not going to, you know, do, oh, you're a Georgia Bulldog, you should know better than that. David Pollack played football and was on a roster with a guy who was athletic, had a strong arm. Now, he wasn't as tall as Cam Newton, but DJ Shockley is kind of fits all the molds that everyone tries to do with Bryce Young. And this is no way to besmirch DJ Shockley, because I think that he is a fantastic college football player. But no one, there's no denying that his career path doesn't add up to what Cam Newton was. Cam Newton is on the Mount Rushmore of college quarterbacks, I think. My point in saying this is that there are so many respectable, talented quarterbacks that you can point out and say, hey, this player reminds me of this player, without it being the most egregious take of, oh my God, one of all. Like, this is the idea of every time there's a point guard or a guard in the NBA that's coming up and they've got a gritty attitude. Oh, that's Kobe right there. That's Michael Jordan. And everyone looks at you and goes, no the hell it isn't. Just because he has a handful of traits, like, there's so many nuances that made those players so great and made them what they are. And I understand that no one's saying that, hey, this player reminds me of DJ Shockley. That's not going to get the headlines. That's not going to be, you know, a sexy take to give. But at the same point, like, can we stop trying to just pick a handful of traits and go, oh, this reminds me of one of the greatest players to play this sport?
Oh, I completely. You know what? I have a solution for this. And I have to get a little nerdy to do this, but it's the ultimate solution, in my opinion. You know about the AP style book.
Of course.
Okay, so the AP style book, for those that did not go to journalism school or who do not know what this is, the AP style book is the complete guideline of things that you can and cannot do when writing an AP style. I mean, you can find it, you can search up anything you want. It gives you all the rules of what you should capitalize, what you should not do, put a comma here, all that stuff. We need an AP style book of comps and sports, and we need a list of players that you are not allowed to compare players to. And so you would just have a list of athletes for all sports. You'd have a football section. You'd have a baseball section. You'd have a basketball, like all soccer, whatever. And it would be, you are not allowed to compare this player to Cam Newton because this. You cannot compare this player to LeBron James because of this. You cannot compare somebody to Barry Bonds because of this. Like, we just have these anomalies in sports that, and it's so weird because, like I said, I think in the moment we all kind of realize probably never going to see another player like that.
Yes.
But then we get so far detached from that that it's, well, we're ready for the next one. When's the next Cam Newton going to be here? Mm-hmm. Because that was such a fun time to watch him play football. I need another one. Well, this Bryce Underwood guy kind of looks like him. Maybe he's the next one. I think we need an AP style book of sports comparisons that say, no, you're not allowed to do that.
And not only that, I'll even expound upon this. You tell them no, but then you offer, hey, here's 15 to 20 names that also fit your traits that you're looking for. That aren't such an egregious take that make you look like a casual. And again, I'm not accusing David Pollack of this, but when you say, oh, player X reminds me of Cam Newton, I've heard blank reminds me of Cam Newton 20 times in my life. None of them have ended up being Cam Newton.
No.
DJ Lagway wasn't Cam Newton. Joe Milton wasn't Cam Newton. There's a handful of these. That's just off the top of my head. This happens every few years where, oh, this player reminds me of another generational player that we only see once in a lifetime. Maybe not. Let's give them some options of, hey, I think this player reminds me of Cam Newton. In reality, it's more like, okay, here are the 5 or 10 players that actually I could compare them to and make fair comparisons.
And if we really wanted to deep dive this, I like this name from the chat. Where did it go? Comparing Athletes for Dummies books. That's a great, like, that's essentially what this is. We could even break this down to certain programs and organizations. So, like, if you go into the Georgia section for comparing players, you are not allowed to compare anybody to Brock Bowers. You are not allowed to compare anybody to Todd Gurley or Herschel Walker or even Nick Chubb if you want to. Like, those are no-nos. But I also understand like what you're trying to do when you make comps, because you got to have some flash to it. You got to get something. You got to say something that grabs everybody's attention. And so saying, hey, Bryce Underwood, he kind of reminds me of DJ Shockley. To Georgia fans, if you were to tell a Georgia fan, hey, this quarterback reminds me of DJ Shockley, they're elated. They're like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I can't wait to see that. But if you told a Michigan fan, hey, Bryce Underwood reminds me of DJ Shockley, their first inclination is probably, who the hell is DJ Shockley? No offense to DJ Shockley, but that's just the case probably,
and,
you know?
And by the way, no one talks about how much of a disservice this does to the players, because now Bryce Underwood has to go out and look like Cam Newton and play like Cam Newton and will forever be compared to Cam Newton. If he does not fall short of that, because maybe the threshold of his game does not actually lead up to that, he is labeled as a bust. If Jeremiah Smith does not come out and look like Julio Jones in the NFL, he is going to be labeled as a bust. He could be a solid 900-yard receiver for 15 years in the league. He'll be labeled as a disappointment because of that talent. Now, whether you want to say that those are warranted or not, those comparisons are fair, that's another story. But my point is, when you do this and you say, hey, this player reminds me of a legend, they have to become that legend, if not, they're failures. It's not fair to the players.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So maybe I'll get to work on that. Maybe I'll construct my own sports comparisons for dummies guideline book. And I don't know. I'll just put it on the internet and people can use it or sell it.
Publish it.
Ooh, there we go.
Get a bag, dude. Then we can retire.
I have been thinking about releasing my first book. I just don't know what. Maybe this is it. Maybe this is the one. Okay. Might have stumbled into something there. Well, we also have stumbled in now to Kirby's top five of the week. Some may dread it. Some may look forward to it. You won't know until you see the topic.
Everyone wants to say this is rage bait, and it's not. These are my takes. I stand by all of them. Now, sometimes something falls through the cracks, and the audience corrects me, but this week I feel like we have a fairly agreeable take or a topic that people could say, you know what, this is about as subjective as it gets. It's food related.
Ooh, so I do like food.
This time of year, things are getting warmer. These are particularly much better. I'm giving my top five fruits this week, Jay. Well, starting with number five, we have strawberries.
Ooh, I do like strawberries.
Now, again, Tom Brady, this would not be on his list. Huh? However.
What'd you say?
Tom Brady would not have these on his list.
Not a strawberry fan, huh?
Oh, you haven't read the TB12 method?
No.
Strawberries are a no-no on that.
Why?
Something with they make you old or something, like inflammation. I don't know. He's Tom Brady.
Don't tell my wife that, because pregnancy has resulted in her loving strawberries. Now, she loved strawberries beforehand, but strawberries have been a mainstay in the fridge lately, and it's resulted in me eating a lot of strawberries as well. So I don't like hearing that, but they're a really good fruit.
Dude, according to chat earlier this week, you are looking inflamed. Which, by the way, what's up with that? Why are we body shaming Jay Will?
Apparently, he didn't mean anything by it, but anytime you tell somebody, hey, you got to cut that weight off, it's, whoa.
Didn't mean anything.
Hey, I know. Hey, I know. Maybe not as slim as I used to be, but I wouldn't say that it's like, oh my gosh, that dude needs to get on the treadmill.
All right, well, we're moving on to number four, watermelon.
Watermelon.
Now, watermelon is a very unique situation here, because it's at the best, at its peak, it is untouchable. But the problem is there's so many factors that have to go into watermelon being perfect. It has to be a hot, sunny day. It has to be in the summer. The watermelon has to be perfectly ripe. You have to be outdoors for it to hit different. Like, you can't just casually pick up and say, all right, I want some watermelon, and it hits the same. So watermelon, at its peak, untouchable. But the peaks aren't as frequent.
Can I say, though, that one thing I did not like growing up is, you know, I'm a huge fan of, you know, been in the pool all day, someone cuts up some slices of watermelon and you eat it after you get out of the pool, it hits. But one thing I never liked is, you know, like playing sports afterwards, there was the occasional, hey, we brought you guys some watermelon. I hated when the watermelon was warm.
Yeah, no,
I did not like that.
Warm, room temperature watermelon is not good.
It's not really quenching my thirst right now after playing a baseball game outside in July in the state of Georgia. Like,
agreed.
I need some cold, crisp watermelon.
That's why it's a little lower on this list. Number three, we have bananas. I love bananas. Now, some people don't like bananas. I know the whole mushy banana thing grosses people out. A good banana, dude, delicious.
Bananas are like, I don't know, I don't, very rarely do I just eat a banana by itself, but in a smoothie, love bananas. One of my favorite ways to eat a banana is just spread some peanut butter on it.
Oh, dude, bananas and peanut butter is a delicacy.
I used to eat those all the time.
Delicious. Moving on to number two, we have grapes. Grapes is kind of an odd one, but frozen grapes, dude, unbeatable.
Green grapes or the red grapes?
Honestly, both.
They have to be crunchy. I hate a mushy grape.
Mushy grapes are not good. That's why they're not my number one, because you do get some rotten ones.
I much prefer the green grapes, if I'm being honest. I like things a little tart. Like, that's just my, I like sour things and things like that. So I like the green grapes a little bit more. I will say, an abomination to the grape world is the cotton candy grapes.
Really?
Not a fan.
I like them. The added sweetness.
Don't like it.
I don't like how, like, every time I take a bite, I know I'm playing God. Because there's no way that the Lord created such a genetically modified fruit. But
purple grapes, red grapes, whatever you want to call them, like, I think they look both at times. I could say you could find purple grapes, some that look more red, some that look more purple.
That's fine. Before we get to our number one, we'll hit some honorable mentions. Honorable mention number one goes to peaches.
That had to be on here considering the state that we're in.
Delicious fruit. Again, one of these more seasonal, you only have a short window of time when they're good. Number two honorable mention, pineapples.
Oh.
I don't love pineapple, but I enjoy it, and it's a very good accent.
This might be my favorite fruit, if I'm being honest. Because if I'm taking all of these fruits at their peak value, like in pristine condition, a good pineapple, it's undefeated in my opinion.
That's fair. I will say pineapple is the most visually pleasing fruit to look at.
Okay.
The geometric shapes that it has and the way you look like when it cuts up, I do like that.
Pineapples are very hit or miss, though, because you could get some that are a little too, they're not as soft, or, you know, they're not as juicy. So they're a pain to cut too. Like, the accessibility to getting a pineapple, not the easiest thing, but yeah. Man, I love pineapple.
Definitely worth the honorable mention. The final honorable mention before our number one pick, cantaloupe. I would prefer cantaloupes to watermelon, actually. I don't know.
Really?
I just like cantaloupe a little bit more. I like the sweetness of it. I like the texture. Not as watery. So I enjoy cantaloupe, but you also kind of run into the similar situation. If it's not perfectly ripe, not great.
I do like cantaloupe. Are you a fan of honeydew?
I do like honeydew, but honeydew is like the third option. Like, all right, there's no watermelon or cantaloupe, I guess I'll eat the honeydew now.
Cantaloupe is an underrated fruit. I will say that. We ate a lot of it at my house growing up.
Definitely worthy of the honorable mention. And without further ado, the number one best fruit in my top five. I feel like you can kind of do deductive reasoning to name it at this point. It is apples. There is nothing better than when you bite into a Honeycrisp apple, a big, juicy Honeycrisp apple, dude. Nothing better. No fruit. It's unmatched. It's the Michael Jordan of fruits, in my opinion.
I will say one thing I do appreciate about apples is the versatility of them. And yes, there's an apple for everybody. Like, if you're a mushy apple person, there's one of those. If you like a hard, crunchy apple, there's one of those. If you want something a little more tart, there's Granny Smith apples. There's a variety of apples to where you could probably appease everybody. Probably not my favorite fruit, but one of the most versatile fruits.
And not just from the versatility of, oh, there's multiple genres of this apple. There's apple pie. There's apple-flavored candies. Like, apple fits well with anything. Like, you can't necessarily say it for pineapple. Like, oh, I made pineapple pie, or there's a pineapple dessert. Like, I'm good, man.
I'm glad Chad agrees with me, because a good Granny Smith apple, oh, it hits, man.
I loved Granny Smiths growing up, but now I'm a Honeycrisp guy. I've changed my allegiance.
Apples are also, we're willing enough to name one after me as well. There are Jonathan apples, believe it or not.
I've never had a Jonathan apple.
I don't think I've actually had one either, to be honest. I think they're one of the softer apples, so I don't particularly like those.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah, I don't like a mushy apple, but are you a keep your apple in the fridge guy?
No. My parents did when I was growing up. So like I did grow up on crisp, cool apples, but nowadays I just leave them in my
pantry. I wasn't an apple in the fridge guy until I went over to a friend's house when I was a kid, and they kept their apples in the fridge. And I ate one, and I was like, this is a game changer. This is way better cold. So from then on, I've kept my apples in the fridge.
That's fair.
All right. I think that is it. That is Kirby's top five. That is also the end of the National Hour. But we got a whole other show lined up right here on the other side of this intro. We're going to talk that dog. We'll see you guys on the other side.